And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 159.
159.
That voice might sound a little different. I'm your host, Silas Lindenstein. With me today is just a guest. Not just a guest. Carly McManus.
Hi!
Actor extraordinaire. Samantha is recovering from the COVID vaccine. She was hoping she would make it, but side effects were as fun as Silas's were. So,
you got too.
Oh yeah, I got mine. I got mine.
I got by mine too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm a little annoyed that we're going to, if I have to go do another COVID test again, feel like I want to go like, but I'm vaccinated.
I'm vaccinated.
Oh, no, don't do that to my nose again.
Oh yeah. Poking my brain. Violent.
Yeah. So she's out today, but still welcome to Black and a Half, the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably.
Nearly factually.
It's hard to verify, but we're pretty sure. Right. Yeah. So today, Carly and I talked about, we had a good conversation talking about like life and the arts, sort of some of our expectations going into it, and then what it's like living and pursuing the dream.
Yeah.
What we think it is. What we thought it would be. Yeah.
How it feels.
How it feels. Feels so good. So good to be to be here.
Yeah. Every day's a gift.
Every day. There's all these sarcastic things I want to say to people when they ask me, like, when you bump into them at the soccer, like, how you doing at the soccer game? Like, and I was like, yeah, I'm living the dream here with a mask on, and
that's right.
Only one person allowed to attend my daughter's game here. But I like adding that one in. For some reason, I feel like if I tell people every day's a gift, they're gonna think I'm being sarcastic, right? They're just gonna.
Right.
Some people say it, and they'll be like, "Oh yeah."
Oh, I love that.
My wife, everyone will be like, she's so optimistic.
Totally.
She's so optimistic. That's what I love about her. And I say it, they'd be like, oh, you're such an ass. Because it's all the background they know about me, right?
Like, yes.
Every day is a gift.
That's amazing. Take it for a spin. I want to know how that plays in the field.
Yeah. I need my phrase of the week for people to please, listeners, give me an optimistic phrase of the week I can test out on people and see how quickly they think it's sarcasm.
Yes, we need to run some field tests.
Yeah, my unscientific theory. Hey, but folks, if you are enjoying the show, if you enjoy this episode, really appreciate it if you go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating and review. Let other people know that you're enjoying the show. It helps us show out a lot. And of course,
it's so easy. It's so fast.
Yeah. And feel free if you want, you can follow me on Instagram at Silas Laughs. You can do that.
I love that.
You can follow Black and a Half. Sure. Why not?
All the follows. Just get it.
Follows.
Right down the line.
And of course, if you want to be a super fan of us, you can go to patreon.com/blackandahalf and join the League of Extraordinary Listeners for as little as $1 a month.
Yeah. Whoa.
Yeah.
Bargains. Deals.
Or you can become for a little bit more, you can become an Inner Circle member like Stefan Ward, Keith Nagel, Tara Widener. Become one of those stellar supporters and get your name on the podcast. Well, spots are available. And of course, you can support the show both by going to Samantha's podcast, Beyond Technique Coaching. Listen to that, about coaching techniques for the mind, body, and soul. And of course, you can also go to my other podcast, the sister podcast, You're Buying a Home with Silas Lindenstein, where I, Silas Lindenstein, real estate agent with Boutique Brokerage, teach people nationwide how to buy homes. And I connect them with real estate agents anywhere in the country, including here, which would be me. That's the easiest connection. But
that's it. It's a one-to-one right there.
Easy. I turn to myself and say, are you available? And I say, yes.
Yeah.
And I say, I think you're the man for the job. And that's how you support it. Right. And that's that podcast. Carly.
Yep.
Where can they follow you?
I am on Instagram at Goose Springsteen.
Goose Springsteen. So yeah. You're going for the name recognition so people remember you.
That's right. I have to say, I woke up one morning in like a panic and I was like, oh my God, it's so good. And it wasn't taken. So I took it and now I can never change it. So.
Goose Springsteen.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it. Get in there.
I like this idea is waking up with an epiphany.
Yeah.
And then like, now I want to see the line of Goose Springsteen products.
Ooh.
Right. The goose, like a goose. And I want to see like the fake story of the fake lawsuit of Bruce Springsteen trying to stop you. You're like, no, it's a goose.
It's just a goose.
It's just a goose with a name.
And he's like, the goose is wearing a guitar with a bandana in its back pocket. I'm like, well, that's coincidence.
That's just American. Thank
that's
you.
American. He's a patriot. He's a goddamn patriot, that goose.
Okay. So, folks, this is a fun episode. And so I want you to open your hearts and open your ear holes and listen to and listen to episode number 159, Carly McManus and the Tale of Buttered Cheese.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by. Join us. Impressive. Join us. Impressive.
I want to break it down first to the Black and a Half listeners. I just got in the mail a notice from Amazon Video from about our previous videos, a royalty statement. And this goes out to everyone who was told their dreams can't come true, like they weren't going to make it. I'm going to hold this up here, Carly. Let me tell you.
Show it. Show it off. Oh, wait. It's fuzzy.
Wait, damn. Yeah.
Oh.
$1.
That's real money.
That's real. You can cash that.
Yes.
You could use it in a lot of stores towards your purchase.
It'll keep the savings account open.
And people said like, oh, doing these 48-hour film projects or short films, they're not going to pay. You're not going to make money off them. And they were just wrong.
What do they have to say now?
Right. Yeah. No, nothing. I have evidence.
So wait, so that is from a 48-hour film project you did?
I have a 48-hour film project.
Okay.
And then another short film on Amazon.
Wait. And that's the combined revenue.
Wait, I might have two on there. I have to see if I put GA up there last year's. I don't think I did. I need to add that on.
We raised that. So that's 150.
Sometimes I hadn't gotten one in a while. I thought they might have taken me off because I had heard that happen. But
oh, really?
Yeah.
Do they do that to like?
Apparently, they needed some room for like to get off, so people that didn't really have much. Yeah. Views.
They had some more Bradley Cooper movies they needed to put on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's why I'm going to change my name.
So wait, so if I go on Amazon
and you put Silas Lindenstein director, you'll find me. Yeah.
You hear that, everybody?
That's right.
I'm going to get in there.
You got the Prime membership. Please stream. I can get a portion of a penny.
I was going to say, yeah. Do you know percentages?
Nah. But okay. It's definitely like half cents or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah,
royalties are weird because really, like, per view, it's almost nothing. But
yeah,
unless, like, I guess Reese Witherspoon, and then it
becomes... I was just talking about to last night or last week about how, like, I got an unexpected check from a royalty, like, for they one-upped a reuse of something I had done, and I was like, blah, 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 what? Oh, this is awesome. I didn't expect this. So, like, an extra check, you know, I was like, wow, that's good.
So I will say that also happened to me earlier this year or in the fall. And I was like, first of all, it is weird that we have a job where you can hypothetically make money in a surprise way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So grateful for it whenever it happens, but I have never been more grateful for that than during COVID.
Oh yeah. 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 I can imagine. Yeah. Something showing up.
Yo.
Like, whoa.
I got I got to use it to pay for my Amazon Prime subscription to watch my friend Silas' videos.
You know, I will say COVID is the first time it brought back memories of college because once again, like when I found like a $10 bill in a pocket, I felt like the lotto. Like, oh, I didn't have to go earn this.
Yes.
Working for 5 hours. it was just so, yeah. I was like, oh, back like in college, finding money. Found money was the greatest thing.
It's funny you're saying that because so pre-COVID, I was a bartender, which means I had cash revenue.
So I think we know what bartender means. I think.
So what that's about, so beverages.
What is that? What kind of job is that?
I would sometimes find money in my pockets because I'd like stick a tip somewhere and whatever.
Yeah.
And all year I continue to really optimistically every time I put on a different coat, I'm like, okay.
Something's here.
Yeah. Could be a 20. No money in my pockets, but
this last year. Okay. That's weird. Cause I will say like, I've used the least amount of cash I have in the last year.
Totally.
One, like nobody wants it.
No.
Like, ew, sure. What are you gonna do?
Spray it off.
For a while I had like some cash that I had just had.
Yeah.
But no, like I was like, oh, I can't spend this anywhere. Like nobody, I have like $40. Like I had $40 for like 7 months.
Yes. Right?
In cash. Because I'm like, well, nobody can spend it here.
That's funny. Similarly, we have a corner store in my neighborhood and the people who run it are so cool. And we went once to like buy some soda or something and the power had gone out down here and their power was still, well, their power was on, but their credit card reader was down. So they could only take cash. And we spent like a really long time trying to figure out like
how do we?
Yeah. And there was like $40 laying around somewhere.
But like, you know, in other countries, like at flea markets, they just text money to each other.
Like, what?
The technology is there, just a secure way. Yeah, that's how you pay for money in these like third world countries. You go to flea markets and they're oh, here's a saucer you want. Like, yeah, okay, text me 25 yalepas, whatever. And they like they just text it to each other and they receive it. They're like, cool, take it. Like that's
not
it.
Not even like through Venmo or a third party app.
Well, that's kind of what it is. Like they, but everybody uses the Zelle or whatever, these micro transaction platforms that are legal in other countries, but for some reason in ours is not, because big banks don't want to skip in the visas. Right.
God. Yeah.
They don't want to skip in those things. People lobbying. Shit happens to lobby. You know, like in South Korea, like the internet is like five times as fast and five times cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we have regulations here to literally slow it down so that we don't enjoy life.
See, why aren't we making a bigger deal about this?
Because we gotta.
We don't have any money.
Well, I don't know. They just don't. We're like, no, we fight about other stuff. Like, we make sure, like, we can't improve. We have constant. We're just trying. Look, we are in this country just trying to. We have constant fights of people just wanting to try to improve their life at all, right? Like. Mm-hmm. Because these are countries that don't, like, they don't have issues with healthcare because they, like, oh, no, we're taking care of it for everybody. Oh, no problem.
They didn't have it.
No, we'll get that taken care of. Oh, roads? Yeah, we'll do that. Oh,
sure.
Upper education? Yeah, yeah.
So, no biggie.
So they work on, like, we're just trying to get basic life rights, you know?
Yeah.
And they've already worked it out. They're like, okay, now we got to work. They're working on internet.
I feel like
high
it is like.
Speed rail.
Yeah. Oh my God. The high speed rail.
That's infuriating.
Yeah. It's.
There's no reason we should not be able to travel to LA in like 4 hours. We should be able to by now.
It's been happening other places for so many years.
Oh, yeah. We just do it. We just don't.
We just don't. I feel like some of that stuff is a little bit a testament to if the people in power decide that something can be possible, then it is. There's really no other reason to not have these things other than a bunch of people don't want it to happen.
I don't think it's the people in power, though. I do think it is partly we have a unique country in that we are so focused on the individual and not the community. And what will make the community better? Well, if we could all travel faster. And so I was like, no. How can I travel faster?
That's right.
I don't need to go to California. I just need to get to Seattle. So what can we do? Like, well, we could expand the highway, a lane, and that'll, you know, after 10 years, you can get to work 10 minutes sooner. And they're like, I like that. Yeah, let's do that.
And then on the other hand, or the same hand, you're like, hey, if we expand this rail system, then people who can't afford to live in the city, but have to work here.
Mm-hmm.
Be able to get to work. And then other people are like, yeah, but I live in the city, so I don't
so why do I care?
Yeah,
it's like the idea, like the people that don't care about, they don't want their property taxes to raise to improve the schools,
right?
Because they don't have kids, or they had kids and theirs are gone, and they're like, I don't care,
right?
No, it's gonna cost me more money. Like, God forbid we have an educated populace trying to take care of you and make sure that you live longer.
Like, people, I think, maybe forget about, like, the lasting impact of education.
Yeah.
It's not just like we're not caring about investing in children. We're, like, not investing in a generation of human beings. It's wild.
That's the individual.
Well, and I don't know if you... I don't know this many... people who are like this, but I have encountered them before, who do have children, and they complain about the public school system and the scorn of it. And they're like, well, that's why I send my kids to private school. I'm like, which is fine if that's a choice you want to make. But
you should. I'm not going to make a joke about this. Private schools are great.
Yes.
Like, if. Okay, I used to teach homeschool kids.
Okay.
Like ballroom dancing.
Right? Oh my goodness.
Like their ages, like probably like eighth grade. Yeah, eighth grade and up, right? It was like a group of like 10 of them.
Okay. Oh, that's so cute. And
for years I taught them. And I even handed the class off. Like, so you get different people. But here's the thing, like, homeschool kids are the most awkward kids. Like, they're not used to socializing. Occasionally there'd be one who was like, yeah, I do theater over there. Wow, yeah, right. They had personality, right? But most of them aren't. So let alone, they don't talk to other people or the other gender, let alone touch them, right?
Oh my God. So here, I didn't think
they're kind of like, oh, Waltz, you're gonna do this and Lee. And there's different reasons you could tell why people were in homeschool. right? Okay. Sometimes like, oh, they're just really shy or they're super brainy. So maybe my parents didn't. I did have a hunchback once.
Oh.
And it was adorable. Like, she loved the class. And I was like, yeah, no. And at that time I was like, oh yeah, no, if my kid has a hunchback, I'd totally homeschool. I mean, then, but that's the only way, because they're going to get awkward. Like, I'm like, right. Oh, I teach these kids. I know I like them, but they're awkward. Like, most of them are awkward. But
yeah, the assimilation process has to happen eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it. Yeah. If you're picked on, I'd take my kid out too. Like,
yeah,
for that.
And that is so hard. Like, I don't know. I don't have kids. You have kids.
Yeah.
But maybe you haven't encountered the bullying phase yet.
Oh, no, we have, like, a little bit. Little mean girls. Mean girls.
Oh, God. Girls are so mean.
Ooh, I had no idea.
I remember being bullied, and I didn't have it as bad as many other children. But, like, I just remember my mom being so upset. And what I can understand now is that, like, as a parent, you don't have the agency to necessarily intervene and make that stop.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
How do you handle that?
I mean, you go to teachers. You got to go to the teacher oh, this is going to. And the teacher's like, right on. Like, nope, we're going to stop this. Uh-uh. Like, because back in my day, it would have been like, yeah, well, pull up your big boy pants, okay?
Right.
Silas. Like, oh, you guys really shouldn't call him the N-word. Suspend you for one day.
Like, oh my God.
I'll teach them. That'll teach them. Thank you for solving racism, Principal Brunel.
Was it an in-school suspension? A one-day
suspension? No, that would have been great, though. That would have been great.
I had a kid sexually harassing me in seventh grade, and he did it to a lot of girls, and he would make girls cry.
What does sexual harassment entail in a seventh grade?
Talk to them about the things that he wanted to do to them.
What?
And he
in
would
in seventh grade?
Yeah. And
I
in
didn't
hindsight,
even know what I wanted to do in seventh grade.
So in hindsight, I think he probably had some really difficult stuff happening in his own life.
Yeah,
you know?
Like, he knows that.
Yeah. But he also would pull girls' bra straps. And like at 12 years old, most girls don't need a bra, but it feels really personal. And I remember being like, this isn't okay. And he did it to me. And I like talked to the principal, and we had like an intervention, and other girls came forward.
Was that
and
here?
Yeah, it was in Tacoma.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm from Boston. Pulling the bra straps, that was almost like tapping someone's shoulder. What? They would intervene? They said, knock it off. Like, all right, whatever.
All right. Well, they gave him in-school suspension.
What is in-school suspension?
So it's like the stepson of suspension. you don't go to class, but you have to go to school.
Oh, you go to like the library all day?
Yeah. I think they have like a room in the office somewhere where you sit.
You know what? In some ways that might be worse.
Because
at home suspension, I was suspended, so I hang out at home. I was allowed to be suspended. My dad was like, if I ever fought anybody, if they call me the N-word, and that's why I got suspended, because I fought him, there was no punishment. No.
Well,
like, okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so he's like, yeah, no, I was allowed to. My dad was like, pretty much a... call the people peace. Like, I want to say, like, he was so nonviolent, right?
Yeah, a pacifist.
Pacifist. Yeah, pretty much a pacifist, except for that. Like, oh no, no, you know, you kick their ass. Like, he's like, right, like, yeah, if they call you something, no, go for it.
There is an exception to every rule, and that is for sure.
Good. And so I never got punished when I was suspended for fighting. Like, because that's
how often did you get suspended for fighting?
Oh, when I was like third through fifth grade. I mean, like three times a year.
Wow.
Probably. But
and was it because of
definitely racism, bullying, but racism, you know, because call me in, we're boom, I win.
Yes, did those kids get suspended?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, no, they always did with me, but like sometimes like where I got bullied. I was getting bullied. I didn't even like fight back once. I remember these bullies like started saying, like they started crying in the principal's office when they were confronted. Like I walked in there and they were all sitting there and they're like, he said, I'm so white. But like they made up things that I was making fun of them for being white.
Oh my God. Yeah,
the one. And I'm like, he's lying. I never said this. And like, yeah, the one black kid was picking on the people two grades older.
Yeah.
On the bus for being the white pit. It's like, it's not even logical. Like,
no. Oh, wow.
It's ridiculous.
I would hope that in that scenario now,
yeah,
it would go a different way. Like,
well, yeah, and there'd be video cameras, you know. So we'd know what happened.
Yeah.
And then we could watch that and not believe it.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So Carly, we met on a set of
You Can Bet.
We met on a set for an industrial gig that was not a normal industrial gig. And I've had three other people on from that. Where we got to do like this kind of, also I can say it's an office parody, but it was like a scripted show that we had to do.
Yeah.
And that was exciting because you never get to do that work.
Yeah, it was like actual acting.
And now they want us back.
Boom, boom, boom.
Like a sequel.
Yeah.
Or like I told my wife, I feel like my pilot got picked up.
Yeah, totally.
Like, I was like, well, honey, I don't think this happens. Like they want everyone back. The whole cast.
Everyone.
I'm like, this is amazing. So we're going to do another set. And I'm like, are they going to air these? This is only going to be at the unnamed industry place that we did it at. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, I was saying, wow, they must have loved it so much. They said, yeah, do this again.
Do it again. You
and
know
the
what
same
saying?
People.
And yeah.
I almost said no.
What?
But I was scared.
Were you really?
Because I have to go SAG now.
Oh.
It's my third. So I'm a must join. But I will still make a little money. Apparently.
Okay.
I will still make some, just not as much.
Oh, but, man.
Yeah, because for those of you who don't know, when you have to join SAG, there's an initiation fee. Thank God I'm in the Seattle market where it's a lot less than like the LA market.
And do you know how different it is?
Well, I believe it's $1,200 in the Northwest here. And in LA, I think it's at least
$3,000.
Yeah.
And that's hard because then you do get put in this position where when you get offered a union job and you're a must join.
Yeah.
You join and pay the money or you don't do the job. And especially if it's work that you want to do, like this
yeah.
is,
fun, this was, it was fun. Well, I was like straight up. Like I told my wife, what they could recast me or they're going to put a different character, another person in to be similar or something. Yep. And then they're going to get it. They could get it the next time. There's no holding out that, we're going to hold out for Silas to be free.
Yeah. No.
So I'm like, at the time we actually thought I was going to lose money. Cause we had the wrong initiation fee. And we just decided, you know what? Because what if they keep doing it? I got to lock in.
I know. And that isn't that so hard? Like you, first of all, the circumstances here are a little rare, I think, that you do something with a really great group of people.
Yeah.
And the work itself, even though it's like technically a training or
training-ish
what?
Video. Yeah.
It's fun. And it's like storytelling.
Yeah.
And you think, boy, I would love to do more of this.
Yeah. And then they go here, have some more.
Yeah. So yeah, at this point, I feel like you gotta jump in case who knows what. What if we become a real TV show?
That's what I was like, this fantasy, like I'm like, yeah. What if they just hire us to be this in-house television show that's constantly we have a weekly show yes, that we put on for this campus, right?
It'd be so good for work morale.
For my morale, anyway.
Yes. I feel like if somebody made a TV show about my workplace, it would make me feel fancy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, aren't we so important that we get our own TV show?
And you were magnificent in this piece.
Oh my God.
Especially, you know, reading the description, I thought you were going to be an Asian woman, but
yeah,
I was like, oh, she's definitely not Asian.
Surprise.
I was like, yeah. Oh, but I think when they got me in, they're like, okay, we can get a white person in now.
There's room for a white person now. Yeah.
Person in.
When I got the audition, I saw the breakdowns and I was like, none of these names are white woman names.
Yeah.
But I'm told I'm going to do that one. So I'm going to do it. Yeah. You helped paved the way for me to be able to come.
I think once they decided to use me for that role. Hey, so let me ask you.
Okay.
Because did you realize at any point when we were shooting that you were the only white person in the cast?
No.
No?
And then later, I was thinking about how I did an accent. And I was like, oh, I was the only person who did an accent. And then I was like, and I was the only white person, which is extraordinary.
Yeah.
I mean, it was only a group of five of us, but still.
It was only second time I've ever done anything.
Really?
That was the case, that there was only one white person.
Oh,
or
yeah.
None. One or none.
What have been the only other thing
was a play that I did.
Okay.
That was the only time.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've definitely moved the needle a little bit from having one person of color.
Yeah.
But it's still pretty rare that there's only one white person.
And well, everyone's a little like ambiguous, you know, like we got a couple of ambiguous folks in there.
Yeah.
Particularly me and Amber.
Right.
Well, whatever they are. Though, man, with the sun out and me outside, it's going to be a little less ambiguous by the time we get there. I'll tell you that. Woo. Yeah.
I love it. The sequel, everybody's coming with a makeover.
I'm like, I went to the Brazil World Cup. Here I am. Hey, how long have you been acting?
Well, kind of forever. I've been in Seattle with an agent for 13 years.
Okay.
Which makes me feel really old to say, but I guess in the scheme of life, that's not that long.
You said in Seattle. I thought you were from Seattle.
I am. I went to college on the East Coast.
Okay.
And then I lived in New York for a little while, as you do. So
did you study acting in college?
I did. Acting and dramatic writing. So like play writing. Oh.
What college?
Bennington. Are you familiar?
That's the teriyaki place, right?
Oh, are you thinking of Benihana?
Yeah, I know. Bennington
is really small, and it's in Vermont. It's in like the north, southwest corner of Vermont.
It has to be small if it's in Vermont.
Yeah, and when I was there, there were like 640 kids.
In the college?
Yeah. And we... In the whole college.
640.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we, it's one of the Seven Sisters schools, which I didn't realize until I was already there, which is like Sarah Lawrence and I think Smith and a bunch of schools that used to all be all girls.
Oh.
Now a bunch of them are co-ed. And Bennington, famously, here are some notable things.
Okay.
It was where modern dance was invented.
Modern dance. Okay.
Yes. And it is the alma mater of Peter Dinklage.
Okay.
P-Tight.
I may have issue with them trying to claim modern dance, though. Like, It seems how we know what else did that before them.
Some of the three of the sort of like pioneers of the modern dance, I was going to call it a movement, but art form.
Yeah.
Were at Bennington. They started their careers there.
Okay.
So
maybe. Okay.
You know, yeah.
I'll give a pass.
It's a nice thing you like put on your website that is not technically untrue, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not entirely.
No. Yeah. You need those things.
Yeah.
It's not a lie. What I said is not a lie.
Not a lie. There's got to be a name for that.
Were you writing? You studied writing too?
Mm-hmm.
I noticed a lot of these like writing schools are in the middle of nowhere. Is that so that you get inspired to write and don't get distracted by like life?
The buzz of the city?
Yeah.
Bennington is really in the middle of nowhere. So your theory checks out in that regard.
Like, I don't know. Like, I always feel like, there's so much going on in Seattle to just sit at my computer to write.
Oh,
when I want to, let alone New York City. Like, I'm like, I don't know how any of y'all write stuff in New York City. You've got a whole city. Like,
the stimulus is wild. And I don't know. I mean, a lot of people, millions of people do it. But for me, it's really, you're tired when you live in New York. And I probably would have a different experience now than I did as like a young 20s person who had to work like two full-time jobs and, you know.
Just to make your rent, right?
Yeah. But I was like, how does anybody have time for art? I don't have that time.
I don't understand that.
Yeah. I don't either. But I really admire people who figure it out. For me, I was like, I cannot see the path between where I am at and the place where I get to do any of the things I moved here to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Were you sharing an apartment?
I was. I had several roommates.
Well, see, that's the thing. Like, did you have literal roommates, like, in your room?
I technically had my own room, but we didn't have, my room didn't have any windows and it was real small. Yeah. So yeah, it wasn't really a workspace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just so, and I don't know, we've trained people to, I think, have an expectation of poverty within it, the tolerance of it though.
Like, don't you? I feel like that's like a little bit of what hustle culture is about. Like, we promote this idea of how cool it is to hustle and have all these like side jobs.
Yeah.
But in reality, it just like, I mean,
drains you.
Yeah. And like a person works so much and doesn't get paid what they deserve and then doesn't have health insurance and you know?
Yeah. And I've said, I've, in the last 5 years since I moved into like one career of real estate, everybody, I've also been my most creative because I stopped. Though my goal isn't to try to be like the number one real estate agent, right? It's to like, it's to have a nice paying job.
Financially solvent.
Yeah. That allows me time that I don't have to sweat when I'm at the checkout counter or something, you know, and hoping like, did this go through?
Right.
Like to just be okay. I'm like, no, I'm good. Oh, so I can take this weekend off and go shoot a film.
Oh, that's really smart of you.
Because otherwise it was like, no, I'm Lyft driving. Okay, so if we shoot, I get up in the morning and I shoot, and then I can still go start driving at 8 o'clock. I can still get the rush and, you know, work till 2 and then maybe get up at like 5 and I could do some editing
Yep.
If
you don't take that shift, you think about how much money you're missing out on.
Yeah.
You feel like you have to do it. And then that, yeah.
And then, also now I have the freedom to pay somebody to do this thing. Like, hey, how about instead of me spending 60 hours to edit this?
Yeah.
You can do this in 10 because you know what you're doing.
That's
how about I throw some money at you?
Right.
And that's now, great.
So you've probably talked about this on your pod before. I haven't heard it in the episodes I've listened to. So feel free if you don't want to.
There's a lot of episodes.
They're right. Yeah. The first one I listened to,
you expect you to memorize.
In episode 72, there was one episode where you said you were the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle. Yes. And I was like,
Damn, Silas. Slow at times. Took a little break. I mean, if we had been nonstop since we started, we'd be over 1,000 episodes probably, right? But like, I mean, maybe not that much because I'm not counting right. But
well, because math,
we'd have a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
We weren't doing it weekly like we are now. And
totally. You know, you kind of like found your stride.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
found
so tight.
Found the thing I love.
Well, so that's what, okay. So when you decided to go into real estate, was it with the intention of creating some structure and financial foundation to allow you the time to do your work?
I did say that. I did say like, I was just exhausted and I'm looking at this ad for the class and I'm like, I thought about this, babe, doing this, and I just can't, I don't know. Yeah. Like, I don't know if I can keep doing this.
Yeah.
Like driving every night or whatever, from going from this, oh, now I'm an Amazon driver because here's a good paying, it's paying good and I'm bringing it in. And
yeah,
maybe I'll, imagine if I did this, maybe I could, like, I end up having to work all the hours I didn't want to work anyway.
Yeah.
Just to get by. So I'm like, if I'm going to have to work weekends anyway, I should do it so that I get at least paid a bunch.
Yes.
And then it started going like, oh, and then I made agreements. If I make this much money in a year,
yep,
I want to be allowed to like take this much money and make a short film. And my wife's like, sure. If you do that.
I love that.
Yeah. You do that.
Okay. Silas.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Uh-huh.
She's in agreement. Like, she's like, no, you did it. You earned it. You did it. It's what you said you would do.
What I love about that too is like real estate is something where you have a little bit of agency over your time.
Yes.
Right. Like you get actual flexibility and the ability, right? If you were like, I got to really make some bucks. You could generate, you know.
Yeah, it does take a little bit more, you know, it's not like Lyft. If I need $100, I can jump in the car and go get it. I could have. I'm not signed up even for it now, but theoretically. Where this is like, oh yeah, you need to go hustle your ass off to find somebody, but statistically you will.
Right.
It'll take at least 30 days from, you know, house under contract till close. So it takes a few months to generate anything. Right. So it's different in that sense.
That is a distinction.
But you can, you know, sometimes I've made all the money that I was gonna for the year in a 3 to 4 month span.
Amazing.
And then I'm like, then there just wasn't business. All my sphere was done.
Yeah.
So that was just it. And then sometimes it's been just steady over the year. And that's like, that's a little more calming.
Yeah.
A little more calming. And it's getting a little more, I think, regular things coming up and knowing
people. Yeah. And do you feel like, so I kind of wonder if the volatility of our work is like similarly smaller scope, but you know, you do a job and it takes some time to get paid. So just because you work in a month doesn't mean you make any money that month. Yeah. So the appeal system is having like a, there's always a check coming in and there's always a check going out, right?
Yeah.
I'd imagine it's kind of similar.
And that's been hard too with like when I was doing gig work, like with Lyft, was, oh, I got this awesome acting gig. This is a great paying gig. It covers a week's worth of Lyft driving.
Uh-huh.
Now, I took the week off, so now I'm short. Or I took, you know, I took the two big days off to shoot it.
Yep.
Now I don't have money from that week, and I'm not going to get paid though for at least 30 days.
Yeah.
And then I find out, oh, they don't even, until it's been 60 days, they're not even going to call the person because that's so common. And going, oh
okay.
Shoot.
A little dicey.
So then realize, oh, you always need like spare money or that savings they talk about. Like, until I had a regular, and that was the thing. Like, I do talk about that. When I first started making money, I thought I'm rich suddenly, right?
Right.
And then after a little bit, I started realizing, oh, this is just how much, this is just how other people make money.
Yeah, this is kind of the baseline here.
This is how you pay for things without a credit card.
Right.
Oh, I was like, it finally dawned on me. I was like, holy shit, everyone makes way more money than I did.
Oh my God.
I had no idea.
Yes. Okay. I had a very similar moment in my life when, you're always like, oh, I can't afford to go out to dinner. I had this moment where I realized all of my friends are saying, oh, I can't afford to do blank. But that doesn't mean they don't have any money. That means they can't spend the money they have to do that thing.
Because they follow their budget.
Right. Whereas when I say I can't afford to go out to dinner, it's because I don't have money.
Says zero. It says 19. Yeah.
So that was a real eye opener. I was like, oh yeah, there's a whole world of living financially that I don't even.
I remember my college roommate telling me like he was stressed out because he's like, Sash, you don't understand. I have more money now in my checking account than my savings.
What?
And I was like, hey, fine. What? You have two accounts. Okay.
One there.
Second, fuck you. I have 19 cents in my account. I'm not joking. When you say you're broke, you're like, he means he's broke because his savings was almost down. I'm like, no, I'm not getting paid for another week.
Yeah.
Like what I've got in my fridge is all I've got. I don't have credit cards, you know.
Oh, wow.
So, like, it's just,
You know, people really live on different kinds of realities. That's, you know, and what's hard is, like, for him, probably that was actually stressful.
Yeah, probably.
And it's all, you know, it's all, like, a matter of degree. I don't think that one should have sympathy for someone in that position. But it is interesting to consider that what is, like, so different from... They're viewing their own experience so differently than other
people. So did your experience in New York, though, is that what drove you back to Seattle? Was the, like, I just don't have time to do anything?
Yeah, ultimately, which was really, really hard. I was a person who, I mean, listen, it's been a really crooked little path to get right here. And part of that has been taking a long time to untangle expectations that I set for myself that felt immovable. Whether or not those expectations were healthy or possible or whatever, right? So I felt like when I graduated college, I had to move to New York or LA, and that was it. Mm. And then I had to stay there. Yeah. But, you know, also, I guess that's like being 22 for you, that you're like so convicted about what the way to do something is. So it was hard when I felt like I don't think I'm happy here, but I have to stay.
Yeah.
Which ultimately I had kind of, I came home for Christmas and I just like the day I had to go home, I just cried and I was like, oh my God, I don't want to go back there. And then I was like, I don't have to. Because what's most important to me is to figure out how to do creative work that could matter. Mm-hmm. And I saw no way to do that there. And what's really sad is in hindsight, the schedule that I had and like the sort of space that I had in my life, it was truly a challenge, but I had probably had the ability to make more relationships and connections with people than I understood at that time, because I was so, I didn't want to take up anybody's time.
Yeah.
You know, I was like so scared of networking. And so,
well, and how old were you?
Oh, 22.
Yeah. Like yeah. You don't know how to network or what the purpose is of it. You're just like maybe trying to make some friendships.
Yeah.
If that, and dealing with yourself and trying to figure out what to do. Like your brain hasn't finished forming.
That's right. Yes.
And you're expected to make these decisions.
Yeah.
Like you're still, you don't have a full brain yet.
Baby. And it is hard to, I think, sort of forgive. So maybe this wasn't true for you, but I think a lot of people, and certainly me, viewed being 30 as this like milestone moment, always looming in the distance. And when you get there, you'll be an adult. And the way your life is supposed to look will have formed by that point. Right. But then like the raw deal of turning 30 is you're like, but I've only started feeling some semblance of like understanding what is going on in the last like 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, like your 20s, a lot of your 20s is not really adulthood, or at least, you know, not the way you imagine it's supposed to be when you're younger. Yeah.
It's funny. You know, when I graduated, when I was graduating college, I had got engaged in college near the end, right? And I got engaged basically because I was like, I need to know. Part of it was like, I need to know, is this a future? Are we going to live? Are we, is this a deal? Because if not, I'm leaving.
Okay.
Like Northern California. Right. I got to go to New York or LA. That was my choice. Yep. Like, unless I'm, you know, if this is going on, then I'm staying.
Right.
And then we're going to figure out where to go or something. So Seattle was sort of a compromise city.
Oh, interesting.
Like, and sort of silent. Like, I mean, I didn't even say it as a compromise, but I knew like she didn't really want to go to New York or LA, that she wanted outdoorsy stuff. I knew she wouldn't be happy in one of those. Right. Presume that. And I wanted to be somewhere with an art scene, so metropolis, you know, of some sort. Right. And so then we saw Seattle was like, oh, this maybe has both worlds.
Yeah.
For us. I didn't really understand. I was too young to understand what that meant and what the world was in Seattle. Or I probably would have said, well, that's not really what I mean.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, totally. Yeah, like, I mean, I would have, and if I even, I got divorced at 35-ish.
Okay.
If I didn't have a kid, I'd have left to New York. Like, it would have been done.
Yeah, interesting.
No, absolutely. I would have been like, nope, okay, well, I'm gone.
Yeah.
You wasted my end of my 20s and my half my 30s. I gotta go.
You wasted my best looking face.
Yeah.
And
so I'm out of here. Like, but I had a kid, so I stayed.
So that is really interesting, because so for me, when I came back here, I did it because I knew I could get an agent and I knew I could start working. And I was like, I don't need to stay, but I can at least start experiencing what my career is.
Yeah.
But then this thing happens, which is the rest of life, right?
Yeah.
And you find yourself in a place that has sort of become your home in a way that is much bigger than the work that there is to do, yeah. You know? So like, for me, I was like, oh my God, I love all of these people and this place and my husband is here and like, I wish there was more work here, but I also really like it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of similarly like you choices are not as binary as you think they are when you're a little guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay. I want to, anything else I ask you gets kind of answered in my.
Ooh, okay. Are we playing a game?
Well, if you, depends how far you listen to the episodes, right? Like,
okay.
Now it's the point, we're at the point of the show. The first time that we have somebody on Black and a Half, we have 7 questions that we like to ask them. It's the world famous Black and a Half 7 questions.
The Black and a Half 7 questions has the little TM in the corner.
Yeah.
At the end of it.
Yes, it does. Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, 7 questions that we ask. So there's no wrong answer. Just first comes to your mind as much as you want to elaborate.
Okay.
Okay. Number 1.
Yes.
What are you most nerdy about?
Dogs.
Dogs.
Weird. I almost said cheese. Dogs and cheese were the first things that came to my mind.
You know a lot about dogs?
My passion for them is deep. Mm. I do know a fair amount about dogs, actually. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh,
that's great. What's something that you love to eat?
Oh, cheese.
Cheese. Okay.
All kinds. I like them always.
Do you like do you put out like a cheese platter at parties or are you a?
So a very famous thing about me, if you asked my husband, is he'll be like, what do you, so he likes to cook. I don't enjoy it. He does. So frequently he cooks and he'll go, what? I was thinking about making this thing. What do you think about that? And I'll go, well, does it have cheese on it? And if the answer is no, then the second question is, could there be cheese? One time I was having a very hard day and I think I was a little cranky and he looked at me and he was like, have you eaten any cheese today? Cheese.
Cheer her up. Just have some cheese.
Just have some cheese. Give this woman some cheddar.
Do you have a favorite cheese?
You know, so I'll be honest. Often my favorite sandwich cheese is actually deli cheese, like the American style deli cheese.
Okay.
Which is not the same as Kraft singles, but like they're the cheese on every sandwich in a bodega in New York. But Kraft makes a pretty good one and it's called deli style American. I don't know. And I love cheddar does well with everything, but I think honestly, my favorite cheese is this. It's German and it's got a German name, which translates to butter cheese. And it's like it's a sort of a semi soft cheese that tastes a little bit like, it's got a little sharpness to it. But it also tastes a little bit like Havarti and a little bit like Fontina. It's great. Okay. So versatile. Okay. Butter cheese.
Great. Butter cheese. Okay. What's something that you love to drink?
Oh. Can I show you what is happening here right now?
Yeah.
I love beverages. I have a water bottle.
Okay.
Okay. A little tea. And then wasn't really sure which way this was going to go. So
okay.
I brought a bubbly.
What? A bubbly?
Yeah.
Bubbly bounce. Hey, I was.
Have you had it? Well, this is my first one.
I have one in the other room. I grabbed the wrong one. I grabbed a regular bubbly, but I have a Is that the triple berry?
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I was just trying.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Okay, well, then I also have a Coca-Cola.
Wow.
And let's not forget the Hawaiian Sun green tea. So,
wow. I'm pretty
into beverages.
You were just like, wow, I don't know where. Where's this show going to go? I got to have. I might be stranded here for a while.
What if the podcast goes on for 6 hours?
You have like a craft services table at your disposal.
I do. Okay, but if anyone listening, here's my favorite beverage of all time, Jolt Cola.
Oh, really?
You can still occasionally find it somewhere. Yeah. Can't buy it online. If anyone has a lead, let Silas know.
Jolt Cola. That's awesome. Okay. What kind of music do you love?
You know, I hate when people say all kinds, but it's pretty versatile. I'll tell you. So the people I've been sort of who are like my like favorite of the now times have been Leif Vollebekk. He's got a little like jazz vibe. He's like folk pop music, but it's he's a really lovely songwriter. Y Oak. You know that band?
The name's familiar, but I can't think of the song.
One of their songs, I think, was a season theme song or very prominently featured in The Walking Dead.
Oh,
so if you heard that song, you would definitely recognize it, I think. Who else have I? I should have thought about the music thing more. I tend to kind of get into like moments, you know, where I'm like, oh, I'm going to listen to this person or this album all the time. Look who's up right now.
Oh, that's not a song.
No, I was just going to see what I was playing earlier today.
For those of you listening, she just lifted up. It was Black and a Half.
Oh, earlier today I was playing Taylor Swift.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of goes everywhere.
Okay. That's fine.
Cool.
Okay. What do you love to create?
I am currently in the process of applying for some grants for a movie that I'm making. So today I spent the entire day writing about what I like to make. So that's funny. I really like storytelling, and I like to write and create stories that can connect with other people. I'm really interested in like the experience of how we live, like stories just about like our humanity and the ways in which we navigate and find each other and survive what we're going through. And so creating a screenplay or a poetry. I've been writing some poetry lately. I hate to say it, but you know what? Live your truth.
Live your truth.
Having a poetry moment, you know? Whatever that is, like exploring something about us in a way that is hopefully always a little funny. And that can bring like a little bit of joy to someone else. That's my favorite.
Okay. What's a game you love to play?
Ooh, okay. So my best friend got a Nintendo Switch, and there's this game on the Switch that we call the T-shirt game. And I think that might actually even be what it's called. And you can play it with a number of different people. It's crazy, Silas. It's so fun.
What do you do?
Okay, so you get, you have 60 seconds to draw as many pictures as you can. You use, there's like an app or a website you use on your phone. Okay. So you're using your finger to draw shitty drawings on your phone of anything. And then you have 60 seconds to write as many things as you can think of. One word, full sentences, ideas, names of people, whatever.
Yeah.
And then the game scrambles them all up and you make t-shirts out of it, and it'll show you, like, you do, like, God, what do you call it? Tiers, you know, like in like a, each round there's like four like t-shirts.
Brackets.
Like brackets. Thank you. Yeah. So you vote in brackets.
Okay.
It's a little bit like apples to apples where you're like, that combination's hilarious.
Yeah. Okay.
Something about how shitty the drawings are and how weird the words are and the way they fit together is like 10 out of 10.
And this is on the Switch?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay. Do you have a Switch?
I do.
Oh, Silas, you have to play it.
But then we have to play with our phones too.
Right. Okay. So the Switch is just the means through which you play the game.
Okay.
None of the gameplay happens on the Switch. Except for the navigation, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. T-shirt game. Is that what it's called?
It reminds me kind of like, I don't know, Jack, or kind of the, or what, like, there's a bunch of games that you can play on different devices that party games.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it is definitely a party game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool. Okay, and last question.
Okay.
In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
She was a wild horse who touched our souls and made us laugh. That's what I would like the I guess that's sort of an epitaph more than what in my biography, but you know what? It's a great first sentence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. It's great. All right. Carly McManus.
Yes.
Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me. This was so nice.
This was a fun hour to share together.
Fun.
Well, hopefully, it's like we're on a secret project together, but hopefully one day it's out there.
Oh my gosh. We will definitely let your people know if it is. Oh,
for sure.
Silas is really funny, you guys.
Oh, you're pretty funny too.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Look at us.
Look at us. We're like adorable. All right.
Awesome.
Black and a half.
Black and a half. Thank you for having me.
Live long and prosper.